From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Cap Radio will have gavel-to-gavel coverage of the impeachment trial of President Trump. On days that we are preempted, you can find Insight content online and by podcast at capradio.org/insight. Reporter Chris Nichols is with me in the studio to start this hour. There will be quite a bit of fact-checking during the trial. Hi, Chris. So the PolitiFact California team will continue to focus on California issues, but might connect to the impeachment trial when it relates to a California leader or statement or witness, whatever the case might be. Let's talk about PolitiFact National and its role during the trial.
Well, PolitiFact National has started to fact-check statements made at the Senate trial. For example, yesterday they gave a false rating to White House counsel Pat Cipollone. That was for a claim he made at the trial about Democrats denying Republicans access to key parts of the House investigation. So specifically, Cipollone said not even Congressman Adam Schiff's Republican colleagues were allowed into the SCIF, which is that secure room where the depositions took place during the impeachment investigation. And PolitiFact found that that's just not the case, that they were allowed, Republicans were allowed in. There's voluminous evidence in the transcripts that they asked questions extensively, received answers under oath. And so PolitiFact rated that statement false.
Can I ask you what would have separated that from something that would have been pants on fire? What makes it, what would have made it a more egregious lie, for example?
That's a tough one. I think,
and I have to check myself.
Sure.
Not that it was a lie; it was a false statement. But what would have reached the ultimate on the rating scale?
Well, I think it's like anything; you can't overuse maybe a rating too much. I think it's a clear false statement. I think they just reserve pants on fire for the absolute most ridiculous, outrageous statements they just felt in this case. That's plain false.
Okay, so let's go to another one from PolitiFact National.
Well, the other thing that the national team is doing is they are publishing articles and explainers offering a rundown of what people can expect as this trial gets underway, including the rules that govern the process, the oath that the senators took, and of course the role that Supreme Court Justice John Roberts will play.
Which is very interesting, and his admonishment from the trial yesterday, or it ran late into the evening, I guess, is being replayed everywhere. I think I'd like to know more about him balancing the two hats that he wears, about his duties or his ongoing work at the Supreme Court at the same time presiding over this trial. So I think that's a story that's still to be told more fully.
It is. I'm sort of wondering if it's just going to be a ceremonial role, or if he's going to insert himself in some actual decision making beyond the admonishing that he did late last night.
Which, by the way, went to both sides. He was basically asking for civil language, civil speaking to each other and in the chambers, in the location of where this trial is being held.
And that does seem like an important role. I noticed that the Democrats also made some efforts to have the Chief Justice sort of help decide on witnesses, but that was rejected or tabled. And so it remains to be seen what more he'll do other than perhaps try to keep people in line when these arguments get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. And asking for the respect, literally and figuratively, for where this is all happening. Let's shift, Chris, to some work by the PolitiFact California team. Your team's been focusing on SB 50, Senate Bill 50. How about a little bit of background and where you looked closer?
Well, this is perhaps one of the most debated and controversial California housing bills in years. And it resurfaced at the state capitol this month. The author, Democratic State Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco, he brought this bill back after it had been held last year. And essentially what this would do if it becomes law is it would dramatically increase the density, the zoning density around transit and job centers all across California, essentially requiring cities and counties to allow for things like mid-rise apartment buildings in areas that are now a lot of the time zoned as just single-family home neighborhoods, so much lower density neighborhoods. And the idea behind this is the supporters say that you know, California just has such a great housing shortage that dramatic efforts like this need to be made to increase what's allowed to be built, to allow building to go up rather than just out. So that's the idea behind the bill. But of course, it's been really, really controversial as well.
So that leads us in a way to claim number one, because on the supporters' side, there's a statement being put out there that has to do with something you just said.
Right. And just to set that up a little bit, the State Senator Wiener was at a Oakland press conference earlier this month where he reintroduced the bill. As we'll hear, quite a few demonstrators showed up to oppose it. But the senator made a statement about the bill to reporters that I thought was interesting. It sort of encapsulates this core argument that SB 50 is needed to increase the housing supply and thus bring down prices for the middle class.
This will create more of every kind of housing because we need more subsidized housing for low-income people, but we need more market-rate housing to try to bring down the prices for the middle class.
Okay, so we heard him say that this will create more of every kind of housing, and market rate housing will try to bring down prices for the middle class.
Right, and I think what he said about market rate housing bringing down prices for the middle class was really our focus. And we spoke with some housing experts, including Alex Schwartz. He's a professor of urban policy at the New School in New York. And he told us that it's just more complicated. It's not so simple to say that you just build supply and prices come down. And he said that there are quite a few other conditions that would need to be met. And he essentially said that, you know, we could see some of the extreme price increases sort of reduced. But of course, that's not the same thing as overall housing prices dropping.
Increasing the supply could, under some circumstances, moderate some of the price pressures in some markets, but it's by no means guaranteed. To the extent that the supply is added at the very top end of the market for hyper-luxury housing, it's much less likely for other housing to filter down towards more middle-income people.
All right, so that's a little deeper dive on a claim by the supporters. How about a claim by opponents?
So one of the claims that we hear repeated over and over again from opponents of SB 50 is that it's a luxury housing bill. You see this in talking points, in press releases from groups on social media. The group Housing is a Human Right, which is a advocacy division of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, they've made this point over and over. They say that this bill is a gentrification machine, that it will essentially lead to these really expensive apartment towers and renters, lower income renters, won't be able to afford those neighborhoods. And so speaking with the experts, they certainly feel that SB 50 could lead to the construction of some housing that only top income earners can afford. But I think that sort of ignores what has been built into SB 50. There are renter protections, including a ban on demolishing buildings currently or recently occupied by renters. There's also a requirement that each new housing development that's built as a result of this bill must be designated with between 15 to 25% of its total units as affordable housing units. So I spoke with Senator Wiener. He rejected this claim outright as false. We feel, at the very least, it glosses over these requirements.
To describe SB 50 as a quote-unquote luxury housing bill is just flat-out wrong. SB 50 is going to enable every single kind of housing to be built.
It's interesting that grabbing onto that phrase, luxury housing, is used as a phrase that would turn people off. You know, the choice of those words to be the message that would make people not want to support it. The tricky thing here is that you really do need to get into the weeds of the language and understand some of the complexities of what's happening in our state with housing to be able to know really what SB 50 will do and whether it is a good choice for California.
That's right. I think it is complex, and I cover this as much as I can. But for me, there's a lot of details, and I'm still learning about it as well. I think there was a point that the senator brought up about luxury housing that I think is interesting and is worth talking about. He says that, you know, this description of luxury housing is misleading. He says that, yes, we have expensive housing in California, but he says that doesn't mean that it's fancy or there's a doorman outside your building. It just means that there's a shortage. So regular housing has become so expensive. People are now describing it as luxury housing. Perhaps it's a luxury price. But he says the answer is to build more supply. But of course, as we talked about with that first claim, that itself is not the sole answer.
Even that point is a bit complicated, because sometimes luxury or expensive housing is that way because of the shortage. But the shortage exists sometimes because of supply or because of lack of land or landscape.
Right.
So the details in all of this are complicated. By the way, why did you not put the rating scale on these claims in this work on SB 50?
Well, I think it's important to note that, you know, all of these are predictions. We don't know. We can't read the future. We don't know what will actually happen if this bill is approved. So we felt that it was better to offer some analysis, sort of the best understanding that these experts who have studied it as to what they think will happen, but we try to reserve those ratings for a time such as that statement that the national team made about evidence actually being shown and recorded before we put a rating on something.
If you are just joining us, I am talking with PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols. Cap Radio will be covering the impeachment trial gavel to gavel. If you are hearing Insight in its usual 9 a.m. time slot, it means that the start time for the trial is likely just after our show ends at 10 a.m. And you can find and hear ongoing coverage for the duration. What's next for SB 50 before we leave this topic? Where is it in the legislative pipeline?
Well, I think a lot of people are wondering what will happen with this bill. I mean, I think there's strong support for it. There's strong opposition. Right now, late last week, State Senate Pro Tem Tony Atkins announced that the bill would return to the Senate Rules Committee. It had been held last year in the Senate Appropriations Committee. So this is seen as giving it a maybe a little bit easier path to getting to a full Senate floor vote by the January 31st deadline that it needs to pass out of the Senate. Otherwise, it will essentially be held and finished for the year again.
Hmm. All right. So January 31st is the next big checkpoint to watch on that. Before you go, Chris, would you say a few words about fact-checking in general and the truth, which seems to be this absolute that we're all seeking and is, of course, what this trial is supposed to be about? Because fact-checking has ratings on it under the PolitiFact system, is that gradients on the truth then, too? How do you sort this out within your team?
Well, I mean, PolitiFact has six different ratings, so we don't look at everything just like as anything in life has variation to it. We have true, mostly true, half true, mostly false, false, and pants on fire. But we don't just hand out those ratings for anything. Again, we have to see that there's actually been evidence to prove or disprove something. We don't fact check opinions. We don't put ratings on predictions. We can offer, you know, information and analysis as to what the facts are and what experts think will happen when it comes to a prediction. But I think we do have to be careful of not just declaring something to be true or false unless there's clear evidence. And I think that's an important job for us. But there are times, as we saw with the statement by the White House counsel, when you can, you know, actually show people this is not the case. And then I think we're very comfortable putting a rating on it in that case.
Hmm. If I were to ask you what is coming next, I will automatically assume you're going to continue your work on housing in the state and to some degree homelessness. But also, I mentioned that you'll do some work on the trial, too.
We will. We're looking to see what kind of California connections there are. Of course, Adam Schiff, the congressman from Los Angeles, is a House manager. So we'll be looking at his statements. If either U.S. Senator from California, Dianne Feinstein or Kamala Harris, makes statements, perhaps in some form we'll look at that. We're looking for a state connection. We're not going to necessarily fact check everyone that our national team will, but we'll look for our own way to cover the trial as well.
Okay, great. Glad to have you here. Glad we could do this on the air today.
Thanks very much, Beth. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. That was PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols. Up next, women's political activism around the world, but let's take it back 100 years ago. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.